Happy New Year, everybody, and welcome back to our Series 2 of Sullivan Strum's podcast. In our first podcast for the year, we have a really gorgeous conversation between contemporary artist Angela Tiatia with Genevieve Smart. Jen is the co-founder of the iconic Australian fashion label Ginger and Smart, and they're talking about art, climate, and fashion. It's a really wonderful conversation between two kindred spirits who met about 4 years ago on Heron Island at a climate change crisis workshop. So please enjoy. I know that when I heard this podcast, I wanted to hear more. So if you do want to hear more, please send us an email, art@sullivanstrumpf.com, and let us know your feedback because we'd love to hear it. In the meantime, enjoy this conversation.
We first met on Heron Island, both on a quest to learn about climate issues from Tim Flannery and those amazing scientists. And we connected in the ocean and snorkeling. And remember, we sat on the boat that day and we were on that first. We were both a bit nervous going out there. I am so interested in your work because I do see so much hope in that work. Do you feel optimistic about change and about the future? Do you mean that to come through in your work?
This was the thing that was really awesome about that Heron Island trip. I did go in really pessimistic, with a really pessimistic view, and oh my God, we're done for, you know, it's a lost cause. But coming away from that, I came away with hope because of the conversations. So I feel like my whole view on that had changed and that we must have hope in order for us to instigate changes.
I see that so much in your work. It's so important to have some hope. And when I look at it, I just see you're explaining the terror of it, or hope as well. There's something in it that makes you want to be part of the story. And I do love how you draw those two things together, like you did with Golden Hour. It's that space between the morning light and the evening light and the hard and the soft and all those sense of polarity. I'm really interested, have you always found that electricity that happens there between those elements?
I always love exploring in-betweenness of moments, and the Golden Hour, it's the exploration of that magic time in between. It's not day and it's not night, but it's that in-between time that is so full of hope. And a lot of my works do have that in-between space, whether it's between calm and complete destruction. It's that in-between space where things are not quite figured out. So it allows us to formulate our own endings.
It's like the moment before you fall asleep, isn't it? You know, when you're awake but you're about to fall asleep, and all that consciousness that happens just before you fall asleep. It's such a blissful space. I feel like we've got that similarity somehow in this conversation that I'm discovering about us, is that place in between.
Yeah. Well, there's an in-between space in that too, in your own practice. And then like how you use your block colour as the grounding, the earthiness, and then your light, your lightness.
Yeah, well, I think for me the balance of print and colour and texture is really key to the essence of the collection, and the colour palette's usually where I begin to develop the ideas. So if there's a print in a bold, bright colour, it'll repeat through the collection subtly embedded into prints, but there'll always be an earthy shade to balance it out. So I guess it's a bit like the collection has to eventually sit in its entirety and be cohesive. I suppose it's like reading an interesting book or a film or something. It sort of eventually needs to sit together as a story and feel resolved, I guess, somehow. So it's a bit like a Tetris, putting the collection together. It's moving parts all the time until the balance is right between all those things. So we're experimenting with like designing the prints or the colours, but everything keeps moving around until I feel like the balance is right. And there's only a finite number of pieces in the collection, so it kind of all needs to fit. And so things move around a lot until I feel like those things that you talk about are balanced, and I feel like it's telling a story that feels like it's complete in a way.
I just had through my mind that you're working through your collection just as a painter would, putting together a big cohesive solo exhibition. That's what was running through my head.
Which draws me back to you. I was looking at how many amazing mediums you have mastered. Is that curiosity for you that takes you on that journey from video, from video art to painting and sculpture, and even you're making your own scores. What's that journey? Is that curiosity, or tell me about that?
Well, I really love learning, and I feel like I'm going to be a student forever. And I feel like I have so much more to learn in any of the mediums that I've turned my hand to. And that curiosity that you talked about, I'm interested in what my hand in that medium would look like or sound like or feel like if I had an opportunity to work with it. And the choice of medium often comes through the idea first and which medium will carry the idea the most. And sometimes it's budget too. And sometimes it's the skill that I'm most apt at, painting and installation and drawing. I find much more challenging because I still have so much more to learn. Often I have to pick up a new skill because I don't have the money to pay, but I enjoy the process.
Necessity is the mother of invention, isn't that how it goes? I'm sure it's not that, that's not how it goes, but... Well, it's good. Sometimes, you know, not having budget pushes you to do creative things. I know it does in my world.
How does that manifest itself in your industry?
Oh, look, Alex and I, we've done it, well, gosh, because starting a business was not a shoestring. We did everything ourselves and we still do. I'm shooting tomorrow and I'll be styling, art directing, you know, like we still do a lot ourselves. We still haven't delegated or outsourced everything, and I think that keeps us really close to what we're doing. So I still sketch everything every day, and I think that keeps it a true expression of what we're trying to do with the brand, and we're still quite a small team.
Well, that's what I found quite magical about the day that I was invited to come and do the shoot for your campaign with all the other beautiful women that you had invited. And that's the thing that I found really lovely and really welcoming was to have you there and then learning that you're so present. It made me feel really, really good to know that you had your hands across everything and that you were present. And that was a really awesome day to be let into your studio.
Oh, we were so grateful to have you there. I couldn't believe it when you said yes. Oh. It was such a long shot because, I mean, the whole, you know, and our Ginger and Smart team, they're really genuinely incredibly passionate, not only about climate justice and sustainability, but also in celebrating amazing women. So I think you probably felt that on the day. And I think it came about because together we wanted to celebrate these amazing women who, I mean, are making so much change with you through your art and activism. It's making so much change to the culture of this country. It's so important. And it was nice to actually just hear your stories. We didn't want to talk about Ginger and Smart. We just wanted to hear your story so our clients can sort of see how much change can happen and what incredible work that you're doing, and they can go and be inspired to do that as well. And we were so inspired by you as well. I just think what you do has this amazing rebellious spirit to it, like Golden Hour at the Gallery. It amazes me that it's all about questioning what portraiture is, and they're burning the pictures, and downstairs the nation's biggest, you know, portraiture exhibition is on with the Archies. So I just wanted to know, if were you always brave? Have you always had that brave spirit as a child inside you?
Not at all. Like when I was a child, my family household was so strict and we had these really strict rules that we had to abide by, and especially because I was the youngest female in the house, that I had to be obedient and quiet. I don't know, maybe the rebellious spirit that comes out in my work is a reaction to that, those early years in my life.
It's a lovely, gentle, rebellious spirit, though, that it's calling for so much change. I just, you know, some people are born with it in their gut. I just wondered. It seems like it sits with you really well. I do want to ask you about narcissists too, because I've read a little bit about it, but I know that the whole idea of selfies and everything, I know that we've both got young teenagers, I guess. Yours is about the same age as mine, I think, from our conversation. But
So Narcissus is currently being shown at the National Gallery of Victoria as part of their 2020 Triennale, which is showcasing 85 designers, architects and artists from all around the world. And so Narcissus is 12-minute moving image work, and it starts off by presenting the viewer with the very classic singular figure, the Narcissus that we know of so well in the Caravaggio painting. So the camera starts on black, and then you see Narcissus' reflection in this black water, and then the camera pans up and you see Narcissus, the young, gorgeous, beautiful model. His name is Justin. And then we pull the frame back, and then the camera is, the frame is broken by realizing that there are other people in behind, which is an interruption to the classical myth, because in the classical myth, it's Narcissus by himself. And so there's that immediate interruption of these figures in behind, and then the camera pulls out more, and then you see more of other people's faces. And for me, all of those actors represent another form of Narcissus. And so all together, that there are 40 Narcissi all vying for space to capture to see their own image in this black water being reflected back to them. And for me, that was, you know, talking about the black mirror, you know, when we're scrolling through our phones, selfie after selfie, and no other time in history are we given access to seeing so many people, you know, thumb scroll after thumb scroll into their private lives and or into their curated lives. And so I wanted to bring each thumb scroll, each person, all onto one shared space. And then with that whole mixture of emotions that we see being performed and enacted over on Instagram or Facebook or even the news, all joining together into this vast chorus of chaos. And then at the end, I have this woman who's holding her hand up right at the very end is the final thing you see, almost like she's raising her hand to save us as we all disappear into the black water. Yeah.
It sounds so beautiful. And what was the moment that made you, well, what brought you to this? Was it during COVID when you were on social media more, or was it?
I think that work in particular came out of my own realizing the impacts of social media, or my addiction to social media and my phone, and not paying attention to my son or my husband or the people that I love in my life. And just becoming aware of being out in a restaurant with my gorgeous family, and we're all sitting there on our phones. Like, I feel like we just have no idea of the impact of this technology on us. Like, even though it's connecting us to people that we may not know or have particular closeness to, is causing this massive dislocation with the people that matter the most.
Yeah. Beautiful. Sounds like you're going to draw everybody in with beauty as well. I mean, the way you describe it sounds like a film. That sounds cool. Like, it is a film, but it sounds so beautiful. But I'm sure it's also terrifying.
I see our young kids, they're so much more onto it than I ever was. And so there's so much hope in their approach to how they view the world and how they're in it.
And I think that's probably the other side of social media that is the good bit, is they've got so much more access to knowledge. And so the flip side is that there's probably anxiety about all the knowledge that they have and being on social media, but they also have all this enormous information and knowledge that they can make good choices and do better than we do.
It's interesting, you know, with both our interest in the climate crisis, how separate humans seem to put themselves apart from the environment, whereas I feel like there seems to be like a new wave coming through where it's a much more holistic approach.
Yeah, I can. It seems like a relationship, isn't it? I think people are realizing that you have to, it's a relationship with nature that is going to make it work, and loving it and understanding it and immersing it. And I just don't think that you can really, really want change unless you really, really have a real relationship with nature, like you do walking at night or feeling or smelling the grass or whatever it is. You have to feel and smell and touch all those things to want to do things differently. It's like, why would you stay in a bad relationship, you know, without really wanting to? I think if we all really want to make change happen, we all need to be closer to nature and feeling it deeply.
I think that's a beautiful place to end the conversation right there. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Don't forget to send us some feedback to art@sullivanstrumpf.com or simply subscribe. We look forward to seeing you on our next show.